Coming up on the Social Hour, Review CEO Steve Years joins us. We're going to talk infographics and resumes and LinkedIns. And how about those Twitter stats during the Super Bowl? Woo! All that and more next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for the Social Hour is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is The Social Hour with Sarah Lane and Amber MacArthur. Episode 46, recorded Monday, February 6th, 2012. This episode of The Social Hour is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And by Hover.com. Hover is domain name registration and management that's simple. Upgrade to a premium domain and trade in your old clunkers. Visit Hover.com/socialhour. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Social Hour from Twit World Headquarters in Petaluma. I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, where it does not feel like winter.
It doesn't feel like winter here either. And Amber, I'm starting to get weirded out. It's not raining and the hills are brown and that's how they look in the summer. And the cherry blossoms are starting to bloom and nature is confused.
It is very disturbing. You know, I went to the skating rink near my house with my son, who is just about to be 3 years old, believe it or not. And he was picking up snow that they had kind of scraped off the rink and playing with it like it was some type of foreign object. And that's not a normal thing for a Canadian winter. So that's when you know it, when your kid has to rely on going to mounds of snow outside of the arena, that things are a little bit strange on the climate front.
Well, I don't know what the story is on that, but we do actually have, we can switch gears completely. Let's say that, the weather in Toronto is just, it's weirded you out too much. You want to relocate and get a new job in another city or something. And for whatever reason, you got to brush up that resume and you want to know what some of your options are in this day and age. We have a lot of our work information online. It might be in a bunch of different places, but there is actually a new service that Amber, you discovered called Review. That's R-E-V-U that'll help you display what you're good at in new and different ways. And to help us talk a little bit more about it is Steve Years, the CEO of Review. Hi, Steve.
Hi, Sarah. Hi, Amber.
Hey there. Thanks so much for coming on the show. I was just stumbling around on Lifehacker looking for cool services to talk about on the Social Hour. And I came across your service and I immediately went there and signed up. And I knew within a few seconds that it was very slick, very intuitive, and therefore would make a good hit or a good fit for the show. So can you talk a little bit about Review for people who maybe haven't gone there already to check it out?
Sure. Review is a free online infographic resume generator. So the idea is to kind of break the bounds of an old traditional resume, which was black and white text on a white page, chronologically listing your professional achievements over time, and to give you a new platform in which to express yourself. You know, our tagline is "Don't send a resume, tell your story." So we provide interactive charts and graphs that allow you to highlight those things that you're best at. And if you have a LinkedIn profile, we enable you to kind of kickstart your whole infographic resume by importing your professional work history, and we'll create an interactive timeline out of it.
Yeah, so I was able to pull in my LinkedIn information quickly. I was lucky to snag Sarah Lane as my as my review URL, which always makes me happy because I like to be that Sarah Lane on all of these services. So indeed, I was able to put I just picked some sort of silly picture of a record player that was in photos on my computer, but you can obviously upload a photo to the background. That was easy. And then yeah, here's my work history, and this is obviously coming straight from LinkedIn. If you hover over particular jobs, it's everything verbatim that I've entered into my LinkedIn profile. But it's more of that infographic type of a thing, which is for many people, it's not only kind of, I would say, on trend because people love infographics these days, but it's almost better than a list form because it gives you a sense of, okay, what year was it? And here, various jobs that I had at the same time a couple of years ago. I think it's easier for people to read in certain cases.
Yeah, you know, and I think that interactivity aspect of it as well, where you can, like you said, hover over one of the events and it brings more of the detail out to it. I think it makes the aspect of exploring your work history a little more fun as well. And of course, the timeline is just the first step in creating these profiles. We really say it's just the jumping off point. Because once you go into the back end, we present a bunch of interfaces to you where you can create charts and graphs, show your interest over time. If there are some real meaningful statistics about something that you've accomplished, you can highlight that. And the other really cool thing about the service is, what you showed was just the default theme, but we have about, I think, 13 themes now that you can apply, so you can make your page stand out from others, as well as the ability to rearrange items on your page in a vertical way, so that you can really bring those things which you think are the most important to the top of your page.
Is there a way to integrate this into your own website? Because there would be people, like myself who has ambermack.com, and maybe I would like to have this as part of that. Or is that something you see happening in the next phase of the service?
That definitely in the next phase. I mean, some people are already redirecting their personal URLs to their review page, which we think is awesome. And that's what a great compliment. But no, in the near future, you will be able to embed your review into your own website. We're going to have a Facebook app that would allow you to just take your review page and put it as an application on your Facebook page. The development plans that we have are pretty long and exhaustive, but we have some finite resources we're dealing with.
This review instantly, when I was plugging in my LinkedIn account, I linked the two mm-hmm. accounts and it pulled in a bunch of my information. So I said, oh, okay, that's cool. I think I get it. But Steve, when I looked at your profile, because you've obviously put some work into it,
sure.
and there's graphics and there's all sorts of information, I went, oh, wow, okay. So I see where review can really give you a much more robust picture of not just where you've worked in the last 5 years, but you can have quotes from people and activity. And I mean, there's a lot of depth here. The way that it looks instantly reminds me of About Me. Am I the first person to tell you that?
No, not at all. And I mean, I think About Me is a phenomenal service, and obviously we've taken some inspiration from them. But whereas they are a social media aggregator, they take all your profiles from across the web and try and put it into one place. We're certainly not doing that. We allow you to put links to your social media sites so people can explore more about you and see who you are. But we're really trying to give you a platform where you can quantify your professional achievements. And maybe you don't even have a really big work history. Maybe you're a student and you're trying to pull together your first resume. You don't have that big, long work history that someone with 10, 15 years of experience does. Well, we give you these different charts and graphs where you can maybe highlight some of those things that you were really good at school, some of your favorite pastimes, quotes that people have said about you. So you're not tied to this chronological bullet points of your work history.
Let's talk a little bit about your past experience and how you came to develop something like Review.
So I've been working in high tech up in the Silicon Valley for about 15 years now. And an old colleague of mine came to me and said, I'm up for a big promotion. They're asking me to submit a resume. Will you help me pull together an infographic resume? So I have some Photoshop skills, and I took his rudimentary drawings on the back of a napkin and turned them into an infographic resume and gave him a JPEG. And the response that he got from the people who were looking at his resume was phenomenal. He got the job, which is the punchline. But then he came back to me and said, you should sell this as a service. And I immediately thought, well, yeah, it'd be great, but that doesn't scale. So what if we could automate the process? What if we could create a website where you could scale it to thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of users, and enable them to create an infographic resume and then customize it? And so we started noodling on this idea and decided to go for it. And see, we started writing code in May of last year. We entered the beta of Review into a software competition called the 59 Days of Code, and we won that competition. Opened it up to the public around September, and things have just begun to snowball this year. Traffic's really picking up, and people seem to really appreciate the concept and really being able to take our platform and express who they are.
Well, I love it. I think the design-wise, it's easy to use. It's really nice that you have so much control over how it looks customization-wise, and you can really make your review page yours. Do you plan to roll out, premium accounts, or how are you going to make money here?
Yeah, we hate money. So.
That's a nice problem to have.
No, absolutely. We're working on our premium accounts right now. We provide you in the back end statistics about who's looking at your page, how many times they've seen it, and how long they spend on your page. And so part of the premium package is going to be much more advanced analytics about the traffic coming to your site. And so you'll actually be able to run your own personal promotion campaigns. So we'll allow you to send out a customized URL into Twitter, say, and then you can see how effective that was at generating traffic coming back to your site. We're also going to expand the number of charts and graphs, the infographics that we give to the premium users. And then, of course, there'll be extra themes and customizations as well.
Very cool. Thanks so much for joining us. I just have one last quick question, which may seem like it's coming out of left field. But I was thinking about review and how it works really well if you're on LinkedIn because you can use your credentials. I'm curious what your take is on LinkedIn. You know, there's a lot of battling between Facebook and Twitter as far as attention in the media. But with LinkedIn, what do you see this as far as the direction that LinkedIn is going in 2012? Do you think it will be one of the big players and continue to grow?
Yeah, I've been actually really impressed with LinkedIn recently. They've expanded their ability to do like real-time updates and to share information with other users. I've recently been investigating all of the LinkedIn groups, and there are some really active discussions going on in those LinkedIn groups. More in-depth discussions than you would get on Twitter or maybe a Facebook post, where professionals are really discussing problems that they're having at work, or recruiters are talking about recruiting strategies. So I think LinkedIn provides more of that, a place where you want to engage in more in-depth, deeper attention type of conversations. It's not as immediate as Twitter and Facebook. So I think they have a real nice value proposition carved out for themselves for people who are more interested in using the web and social applications in a business capacity.
Love it. Thanks for answering that. I was just curious because I've realized more and more how much you can do on LinkedIn, especially when you're syncing up with services like Review. So thanks for letting me indulge in that for a second. And thanks so much for joining us, especially at it was kind of last minute. So great to
That's
have you
power.
On Skype.
It was awesome the way that happened. I mean, Amber signed up for Review. Steve noticed, sent her a tweet. And within 10 minutes, you were on the show.
I know, it's perfect.
The power in Twitter, real-time communications.
I love it. We actually have quite a few Twitter stories today. It's a very Twitter-heavy episode of The Social Hour. But Steve Yers, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to talk to you. Best of luck with Review. I'm going to build up my profile, spend a little bit more time on it, but it looks wonderful.
Well, thank you so much. And just to let you know, this is a real honor to be on the Twit Network. I've been a big fan for a long time.
Well, we're so happy to have you. Thanks for watching us and listening to us all this time. I know you listened to Amber and Leo back on Net at Night. You said
we're
still just an audio podcast, so
that's right.
You're a faithful, an old faithful. Thanks, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Quick reminder to everybody who's not watching us live, you can watch us live next Monday. Mondays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific is when we record the show live. But if you don't have the opportunity to watch us live, you know where you can find us. twit.tv/TSH is the website to all of our past shows. All the links we talk about on every show are there in our show notes, as well as the video embedded there. So you can just go ahead and play the video, surf around. You can also subscribe to our show. That's probably the easiest way to make sure that you never miss an episode. Subscribe a variety of different ways. We give you, we try to make it as easy for you as possible. We've got small and large video feeds. Maybe you like to watch via mobile, so the smaller video feed is nicer for that. We have audio feeds. If you say, I'd love to watch you guys, but I really only have time to listen during my commute. Anyway, The Social Hour is available for you in a variety of forms, and we're so happy to have you. So thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. And thanks also to Audible. Audible sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. I was talking about people who don't have time to watch things. How about people who don't have time to read? I'm one of those people. I'm busy. I drive to and from work, then I'm at Twit all day, and then I get home and I've got to make dinner, and then I don't have time to read a book. And even if I did, I'd probably fall asleep because my eyes are tired. Audible is perfect for people like me who really want to feel well-read but just don't have time to read books, or quite frankly, like the idea of a book being read to me. I love that. It's awesome. It helps me, it helps my mind, my imagination kind of go off to another place. I like, Baratunde Thurston, by the way. He's on Audible. His new book, How to Be Black. Those of you who aren't familiar with Baratunde, he's a regular on Twit. Extremely smart, funny, thoughtful person. I actually am really excited to read this book because I heard an interview with him on Fresh Air on NPR last week. And even just an hour of Baratunde talking to Terry Gross, I got to know a lot more about him than I ever knew. I know him as sort of a tech guy. And there's this whole other thing, and that's what his book is going to be about. And wouldn't I love Baratunde to read his autobiographical stories to me?
And Irish Americans, and May among Jews, Asian Pacific Islanders,
Americans. It's great. It's like a friend reading me his own book. Isn't that great? That's what Audible can do for you. All right. So if you're thinking, all right, well, how many books do they have? They have so many. They have over 100,000 titles. You'd be hard pressed to find a book that Audible doesn't have. A lot of good new releases, bestsellers. Audible does a really good job of categorizing all of this stuff, or you can just do a nice blind search. You can see books that are just specifically read by their authors or read by other people. Some people actually read audiobooks as a living because they have really good voices, and a lot of categories too. So if you're interested in trying out Audible, go to audiblepodcast.com/socialhour. And guess what you get? A free audiobook of your choice just for signing up with Audible. That is our gift to you. I want you to have Baratunde Thurston's book, How to Be Black, for free. audiblepodcast.com/socialhour is the special URL. And enjoy that book. Enjoy that book being read to you, and let us know how it goes. All right, Amber, we said that it was going to be a Twitter-heavy episode of The Social Hour.
Yes.
And I think that, I don't know about you, but I was glued to Twitter yesterday because I was watching a little game called the Super Bowl, as were many other people, at least in the U.S.
We were not the only ones, Sarah. And I, as I've said in past episodes, I'm maybe not the biggest sports fan in the world, but I do usually watch the Super Bowl, particularly the halftime show, which I was interested in this year. And following along what was happening on Twitter and all of the comments, and I read a really interesting stat saying that in the final 3 minutes of the Super Bowl, there were an average of 10,000 tweets per second. And this is actually a record for a live sporting event. And just trying to wrap my head around that, 10,000 tweets per second. That is so much content that's being sent out, which is why I probably couldn't keep up with most of it.
So, you know, it's funny. It's like, it was kind of an exciting game. Sometimes Super Bowl games aren't, you know, they're not always going to be like a nail biter to the finish. So I think that had something to do with it. But I think, and there were a few articles that were written last night and today, just kind of marking these really interesting stats about how many people seem to be engaging online during things like the Super Bowl, that it has to do not only with people just wanting to be on networks like Twitter, Facebook, Google Plus, that sort of thing, but wanting to talk about what they're watching on TV. And I think I often will, if I'm watching something live, I'm much more inclined to tweet about it because I know that there are, you know, if it's a big event like the Super Bowl or maybe the Oscars come to mind or something that I know not everybody who follows me is going to be right there with me, but a bigger number than usual will get the references. And I don't even necessarily need to like add the hashtag because it's kind of understood that we're all watching this. I'm sure that factors in for people as well.
Yeah, you know, I found at one point, you know, during the halftime show, which I thought would be a little bit better. I wasn't that impressed with it, to be honest with you. And I thought, okay, I'm going to really read through all of these tweets and all these messages on Twitter. And to me, that was, I always feel it with live events, you know, it's such a great viewing experience to be able to see what other people are thinking and all of the comments. You know, some people loved it. Some people absolutely hated it. A lot of people made fun of Madonna for her age, which I think was terrible. But anyway, that's a whole other show.
How can you make fun of somebody for being a certain age?
I don't know. I mean, I just thought,
we're all going to get older.
Okay, I'm going to get into my little mini rant. Okay. So if you had someone up there like Keith Richards rocking it out, or, you know, Rod Stewart, people would not have attacked him because of his age. Even if his performance was poor, they wouldn't have said anything about his age. But I saw so many tweets that were like, she's too old to be on stage. Is she Lady Gaga's mother? And it just went on and on and on. And I'm not a huge Madonna fan, but I just thought, you know what? That's just ridiculous. Women can't get a break. But nonetheless, this is a tech show, but I had to squeeze that little rant in.
Well, Amber, I must admit, and you may have already seen this, I did retweet something because she had the LMFAO guys on stage with her, and they sing that song, Sexy and I Know It, and somebody had tweeted, I'm 60 and I know it. So I did retweet that because I laughed, but that is perhaps in poor taste because she's not 60. Actually, no, she's not 60.
Not
she's
quite,
much closer to 50 than 60.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, it's not that big of a deal. But nonetheless...
it's true. You're right, though. You're right. There's a double standard.
Yeah, there definitely is a double standard. But it was fun to just tune into all of the conversations and the back and forth and to see what was happening. And amazing just to see the amount of conversation that was going on. And, you know, people have talked for years that television is dead. You know, TV is over. And the reality is, I think with social, particularly for live events, this is what really kind of spruces up the TV experience and gives it that much longer of a life in our future. So that's just one example of the Super Bowl yesterday.
Bluefin Labs, the story from All Things D, Bluefin Labs, a social TV startup that analyzes commentary during TV broadcasts, said 11.5 million comments came in during last night's Super Bowl game, which is up more than six times over the Super Bowl last year, which, I mean, I was tweeting up a storm during that Super Bowl as well. because I remember the Black Eyed Peas were the halftime show, and I wasn't a really big fan of that performance. Bluefin Labs has a competitor, Trender, with two R's at the end, said pretty similar stats. They counted just under 16 million comments for the game, which was up from just 3 million the year before. So, you know, those numbers aren't exactly the same, but they're pretty close, and it all signs point to more people have the access to be online and are engaging on things like Twitter. And it's, you know, I don't really see it changing course at all. I'm not sure if they're going to leap another jump the way that they did from last year to this year for next year, but I don't know, maybe so.
This is kind of a good lead-in for our next story, Sarah, because this might explain why there are so many people tweeting. This is a study, and it was just released, that shows that the urge to tweet is harder to shake than using drugs smoking or drinking. And this was a study that was done by someone at Chicago University's Booth Business School. He surveyed 205 people between the ages of 18 and 85 in a German city, and the participants were all given Blackberries and questioned seven times over the course of 14 days about their different desires. And it turned out that one of the most significant desires was that desire to tweet. And people couldn't really stop tweeting. You know, they just went out and did it. Kind of funny. I mean, there are a lot of holes in this study, but it certainly is a good headline.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, you said drugs, and they do say that nicotine is the most addictive drug.
Yes.
Depends on the person, I'm sure. But, nicotine can be very, very difficult to get away from. So when I think of it that way, you know, I think, all those years my dad had such a hard time stopping smoking. You know, he'd laugh at something like this now because not everybody is so, jonesing to tweet all the time. But I do see some truth to this. I definitely, Amber, will sometimes write out a tweet. I mean, believe me, yesterday there were definitely tweets that I didn't need to send, but I just did anyway because I was... You know, the momentum of the Super Bowl got the better of me. But there are tweets where I'll write it out and I'll think, okay, this is pretty funny, you know, or this is pretty smart or whatever. And I'll sit there and look at it and I'll make myself delete it. before it's even sent. You know, I'll kind of go like, you know what? It's just, this is, it's sort of useless. I'm really not contributing anything. And I don't like it when my friends do too much of this sort of thing. So there is a, there's an inner struggle that I have half the time of wanting to participate, but not wanting to, I don't know, just sort of flood Twitter with junk. And I think maybe some people just can't not help themselves.
It's like we need like a little incubator or something where we can send those tweets that we think are awesome and funny to like 12 of our friends, and they can give them the thumbs up or thumbs down. And if it gets enough thumbs up, then it can go out. Because I do that all the time too. I think something's hilarious or very witty, and then I sort of decide not to send it. But yeah, you know, it definitely, there is that addictive quality, I think, to Twitter and other services. And it was just a matter of, you know, pushing them aside when you need to push them aside. But I think some cigarette smokers and maybe some alcoholics might disagree with this particular study, but
who knows,
Sarah? But like I said, it makes an interesting headline, and I'm sure there'll be more of these studies in the future.
Well, so Tumblr has is trying out something that at first I thought, well, this is really unique, but Tumblr, Twitter, Facebook are all working on the idea of curation of their own networks. Tumblr, in particular, just hired two people, Chris Mone, who's SVP for content at Blackbook Media, to be an editor-in-chief of, I mean, what are they gonna call it exactly? It's almost an area of Tumblr's blog where they will highlight interesting users of Tumblr. They hired another person, Jessica Bennett, who was a senior writer and editor at Newsweek and the Daily Beast, to be the executive editor. And she says sort of a Tumblr correspondent. I guess the idea that Tumblr has is their service is huge. I mean, millions and millions of people use Tumblr. And Amber, if you and I were to spend all day on Tumblr, I mean, you can't always discover all of the stuff that Tumblr has to offer. But if you work there, then you have access to a lot more account information, and you can see what, you know, is trending, what's getting a lot of page views, kind of what's on the up and up type of a thing. So it would be really helpful for me to have a regular Tumblr digest of here's what's going on, here's this cool new site, or this really interesting that this person's doing, or cool artwork, all of the stuff that people are sharing on Tumblr that wouldn't be discovered otherwise.
Yeah, no, I'm curious, though, if Tumblr is feeling any pressure from Pinterest. And I know the services, they are different, but I have started to read some headlines here and there about, you know, how Pinterest maybe is stealing a little bit of thunder away from Tumblr. Have you heard anything about that, Sarah? Or do you think that that is even reasonable to say?
Well, you know, I think that I've had an issue with Tumblr where it's nothing wrong with Tumblr itself. It's just that I follow a lot of accounts that, or at least a handful, that post a lot of cool artwork. And I like that stuff, but it's like, it actually makes my Tumblr dashboard, where I, you know, look at everybody who I'm following at once in a stream, kind of convoluted. And sometimes I feel like there's just too much of that and not enough actual content. So in a way, I would sort of prefer some of those accounts to be on Pinterest, because it just seems like it makes more sense over there. This is just sort of more visual and more kind of scrapbooky rather than a blog picture after picture after picture type thing. See, this is, you know, how Pinterest looks. This just makes more sense to me if I want to look at a lot of more visually based content at once. But obviously, people can do whatever they want. I think that a lot of folks who are on Pinterest are not necessarily interested in being on Tumblr. So there's probably a little bit of crossover, but I haven't heard of Tumblr being worried. Or if they are, they're not saying so.
I feel, and this is just my own experience, but I feel like Pinterest has really captured that, excuse me, that audience that maybe wouldn't even use Tumblr, like an even broader audience than Tumblr. And I think of this because I keep running across talking to, you know, friends of mine who don't use a lot of these social services, who love Pinterest and can't stay away from it. Mm-hmm. I'm reading about people who are doing courses just on, you know, managing your Pinterest account. And it's just, you know, kind of blowing me away. And I did read one article, and this isn't in reference to Tumblr, but it was talking about Facebook and how Facebook shouldn't necessarily be worried about Google Plus, but instead should worry a little bit about the growth at Pinterest. I think I see them as two totally different services, but we can't deny the growth in Pinterest. And there are some similarities, I think, with Tumblr.
Yeah, Pinterest is... Pinterest has not really caught on for me. It's a very cool service. I'm just not going there on a daily basis. And that's sort of the difference to me between something that's a cool service and something that I love because I have my daily go-tos and then I have my, oh yeah, I forgot about Pinterest. Maybe I should go there and see what's going on. I am certainly in the minority of many of groups of friends who love Pinterest and they wouldn't even classify themselves as geeky people otherwise. But back to curation, Twitter recently created a section on Twitter that has stories that are popular among its users, certainly on its mobile app. Some people still hate that Twitter mobile app, but there's a discover section where you can discover things, which I actually have started to use. I'm starting to find it pretty helpful just to see what friends of mine are reading and linking to. And then Facebook hired a fellow by the name of Daniel Fletcher. He came from journalism school at Northwestern, and he's apparently going to be building out and creating new content for Facebook's channels and pages. Facebook Live is an example that they use, which is video streaming channel that shows conversations with world leaders and celebrities and people in the news. So it seems like all of these sites are trying to figure out, okay, well, if we have all of these users, we have a great user count, millions of users, but not necessarily the engagement that we'd like to see. If they have more of this, it gives me more of an incentive to come to Facebook and stay for a while rather than just quickly check my profile and then hop somewhere else.
Yeah, no, I think you're right about keeping people on their services longer and longer all the time, right? I think it makes sense for Tumblr to want to do something like this. And, almost be sort of that curator for all of that content, right? And bring the best stuff to the front of the service. I guess it used to be that bloggers would kind of do this job a little bit. So it's neat to see them taking it in-house at some of these companies.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seems like these people have really great jobs.
I want that job, Sarah. Maybe that's what I'm thinking right now. That'd be a good job.
Yeah, right.
Tumblr. Find the coolest stuff on Tumblr all day long.
We should have had our review profiles a little bit more fleshed out before Tumblr went ahead and hired those two other people.
Darn it.
Speaking of big sites, StumbleUpon. We haven't talked about StumbleUpon on the show in a while. StumbleUpon seems to be one of those services that sort of quietly works in the background and is just massive. StumbleUpon... It has a crazy amount of users, regular engaged users, drives a lot of traffic to a lot of sites, and is one of the oldest services I can remember that hasn't changed that much over time. The look and feel of StumbleUpon has changed a bit. They have a stumble a bar now, but the idea where it's just like, I don't know what I want to do on the internet, I'll tell you a little bit about myself, and StumbleUpon will give me ideas of sites that I would like to spend some time on. So kudos to StumbleUpon for sticking around as long as they have. But they did recently just change the look and feel of the site, probably more than anybody can remember them changing in the past. And part of that was iframing the sites from within StumbleUpon. Now, a lot of people hear the word iframe and they go off running for the hills because it can be thought of as like, oh, it's ugly and you're sort of within this sort of a picture frame of something that you don't want to be in while you're trying to surf something else. Search Engine Land had written about StumbleUpon's new direction and said, hey, listen, why there are iframes around all of my StumbleUpon sites? And why can't I close that out, which is something that StumbleUpon used to allow? And furthermore, where are the direct links so that if I find something via StumbleUpon, but I want to go directly to that site because that's what I want to do, why can't I get that information? StumbleUpon, to their credit, had responded to... his name is Brent Kostoris, who wrote over at Search Engine Land. And he says that, yeah, they went out of their way to explain everything to him. And it turns out that they did a lot of user research and said, yeah, some people like to kill that iframe. But the problem is that we found more often than not, people were closing it by accident. And then they couldn't figure out how to get StumbleUpon back when they wanted to go to their next site. And then further with direct links, it was kind of the same thing where you click on a direct link and then you get to the site. But people don't necessarily understand to go back a couple times and get back to where they were, because now they've it's almost like the, you know, the difference between opening new tabs. Then you open a new window and your navigation is broken, at least, you know, in your mind. So that's just something that I guess sites have to figure out. Okay, well, what works for the majority of our users? You know, because we're going to upset people. You always do when you redesign things, but you want to, I guess, not frustrate the masses. Mm-hmm.
I always have faith in StumbleUpon, though. It's like the little social media engine that could, you know, it just keeps kicking and kicking and kicking. It's been around forever, keeps reinventing itself. I don't find I use it on a regular basis. I used to use it a lot more, but it's amazing, again, when you look at the numbers of people who do rely on it, and they've had a really long history in this space.
They sure have. I know. I mean, kudos to StumbleUpon. They are absolutely it's like they're really one of the first as far as social media goes. And they didn't really start out very social, but they've done a really good job of incorporating social. So,
yep.
Yeah, I mean, they're growing. They're trying to make things work for the majority of their users. So good on them. And if you have any questions about why StumbleUpon is using iframes, we'll have links to these. There's two, actually, Search Engine Land articles that are really interesting. Gives you a really good sense of what's going on behind the scenes and why they make the decisions that they do. All right, let's move on to some viewer feedback. We got an email, actually, from a fellow named Mark, who emailed us a link to a Fortune article, Fortune Tech, written by Reid Hoffman. If you're not familiar with Reid Hoffman, he founded LinkedIn. We were talking about LinkedIn earlier in the show. And he's the co-author of a book called The Startup of You. And he has actually, this is another great article, we're going to give you all sorts of reading material this week, but he has a few interesting rules that he lives by, and he's also an extremely high-level investor. He's invested in Facebook and Zynga, and I mean, he's done very well for himself. So these are the sorts of rules for himself that I tend to listen to, because I think, well, you know, Reid's got something figured out. He says, you know, in the next day, look around at your calendar for the past 6 months and identify the five people you spend the most time with. You know, so that's in person, that's in the workplace, that's communicating with online, but the people that take the most of your time. And then answer, honestly, are you happy with their influence on you? Because obviously, Amber, I know you can relate that sometimes day to day, depending on what you're working on, there are people who you end up spending a lot of time with, even if it's virtually. And, you know, the way that they think and feel and the way that they work and communicate with you affects you.
Yeah, definitely. No, it's so, I think all of these points are actually really key just to have a sense of, like, I think a lot of this goes down to almost writing these things down too, Sarah. You know, we don't really think about that. You know, we're going day by day. We don't really think about the people who influence us most. And, you know, it seems like they're kind of encouraging you to identify those people and keep track of those people. And also the next tip being introduce two people who do not know each other, but should know each other. And I think that happens a lot more on LinkedIn lately. I get those now and again where, you know, someone I kind of know says you should know this person, and then they try to hook us up and get us chatting on LinkedIn.
Yeah, that's a really good one too. And Reid makes the point that it's like, you know, if you do stuff like that, yes, maybe this all feels a little calculated, like, oh, Amber, you should know this third party that I know that you guys would get along. And it's sort of like, what's my motivation there?
Sure.
But if you think about it, okay, let's say I get laid off and all of a sudden I need to be reaching out to people. Well, it's going to feel a lot more calculated in a situation like that where you're forced to. And then hey, things happen, but there's a much bigger chance of you saying, gee, I wonder why you're reaching out to me right now, Sarah. Obviously you need something. But if it's sort of part of your routine in general to connect people, then people want to connect you when you need it that much more.
Yeah, very, very, very true. So, Sarah, I know there's a few more tips from him, but just so the book is called The Startup of You book. I'm guessing this is sort of a personal branding book where he's giving tips like this.
Yeah, this is this book, you know, I hadn't heard of it, but when I looked it up, it was starting to be reviewed last year. It seems right up our alley. I'd love to get Reed to talk
That's
to us.
That's what I'm thinking.
His book. I know. I mean, it seems to be not only just good tips about, you know, how to make it in business, but that's not really the point of the book. It's a little bit more about how to develop habits that are helpful and healthy and help you, you know, in whatever startup journey you're on. And that doesn't have to be, you know, starting some sort of a, you know, business company necessarily. It's all sort of tied together. So, yeah, it's... I'd love to know more about it, but yeah, I'm sort of just finding out about it as well.
This is kind of neat. One of the last tips: create an interesting people fund to which you automatically funnel a certain percentage of your paycheck. Use it to pay for coffees and the occasional plane ticket to meet new people and shore up existing relationships. Well, I'm not so sure about the plane ticket thing, but it's a neat to think about. Actually, if you're self-employed and you're putting together your own budget, having that small budget where you can pay for someone's lunch or, you know, take them out for coffee and do that a few times a month. I know personally, just because I get a lot of emails, one of the best approaches I've ever had from someone who wanted to just network and kind of pick my brain for an hour was from this woman. Her name's Allie, and she has an online business. And she said, you know what? I know you're really busy, so I'd love to take you out for a manicure, and I'll pay for it. It's my treat. It's a really cool place near where you live, and we'll just go and get it done. And I was like, what a smart way, you know, knowing that I'm really busy, may not have time to do this. And so you have to be a little creative, too, I think, with some of those networking ideas.
That is really creative.
It was really good. So I've been friends with her ever since. She just had a baby. She runs a really cool site called Chick Advisor. And, you know, she's one of the few people I can remember who I thought, okay, you know what? I'm there. I'm going. This is a fun idea. I don't get a chance to do this. And then since then, our meetings will always be around manicures. So kind of a fun thing and a really good approach on her part.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense because it's the sort of thing where it's like to say, let's meet for coffee. That sounds great in theory. I mean, I love coffee and I love coffee shops and I like meeting new people, but... especially during the week, it's like, it's just not going to happen. You know, I'm here, I'm busy. And then on the weekend, then you start to get into like family time, but that whole manicure thing. And listen, I mean, it doesn't have to be a manicure, but I think Amber's point is it's something that is a chore. So if you can just layer and networking, oh, I don't know, 30 minutes or so on top of that, it's kind of fun.
It makes it kind of fun.
Yeah. That's a very, 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 very bright of you, Allie.
Very, very smart. So yeah, some really good tips, and maybe we can try to get him on the show. That would be awesome.
I think he would be perfect for the Social Hour.
Now, this next email, Sarah, I think this was sent to both of us from Mark, if I'm correct.
Yeah, it's actually a different Mark.
A different Mark.
Two Marks written this week.
So he came across a message from someone complaining about this service. He's asking, you know, what we think of it. It's called TrueTwit.com. It's a validation service for Twitter accounts. And Mark's saying, is it that hard to tell if a follower is some sort of spam account? I'm not having that difficulty. I'm also reporting any that bother me. So he says the service kind of makes him cringe a little bit and thought it would be of interest for us on the Social Hour. Yeah, it kind of makes me cringe too, Sarah. I don't know. What do you think?
I'm totally cringing at this. First of all, I hate Twitter services that use Twit because it's confusing.
Yeah.
Twitter isn't Twit. This is Twit. But that's just my whole thing. Okay, so that aside, I don't like the service because it has Twitter behaviors that I don't think should be condoned. For example, following everybody that follows you back. I know that Guy Kawasaki can get away with that for the most part. But Guy Kawasaki is very unique individual. Yes. I think in general, that's really not the point of Twitter, to just follow everyone that follows you back, because there's just way too much noise going on that way. And the whole idea behind True Twit seems to be, well, it will help you auto-follow anybody that follows you as long as the person who follows you enters some sort of a capture phrase first to prove that they're not a robot or a spam account. Okay, well, in theory, it's good not to have spam accounts, but there are probably a lot of spam accounts that are following me. The only time I ever go through the trouble of reporting them is if they tweet at me and I notice that it's obviously junk, and then I report them and they go away eventually. I don't want to spend all of my time figuring out how to weed out people that are following me. I mean, unless they're directly pinging me, it's not my crusade to be on. And then they also, about True Twit, is that all sounds fine and good. But then they're also, they have a premium service, which is $20 per year. So it's not so expensive, but it's $20 per year. That gives you more in-depth follower analysis. I just feel like, listen, if the premise is sort of that we're all following each other and it's totally unmanageable, and you need a service like this, I just don't really agree. I think that you can just be so much more careful with the kind of stream that you curate for yourself, that this just, I don't know. I don't. At first, when I saw this validation, I thought, oh, you mean like verified accounts? Is that what Mark is talking about? But it doesn't seem to be that at all. It's more of trying to make sure that robot accounts get weeded out. But again, it's because people are following too many people and they don't know the difference.
I don't know. I feel like some of these services definitely take advantage of people who maybe are new users to Twitter and don't really understand the entire ecosystem. And I think this is probably one of many that exist out there. You know, everything from services encouraging people to buy followers and, you know, you really shouldn't be spending a lot of money to have to manage your Twitter account and the spam and all of that information. You can do it pretty much on your own for free. I'm not a big fan of this one. So, Mark, thanks for sharing it. And I think our mutual advice would be that you just don't need it.
Yeah, I agree with you there. All right, Amber, continuing our Twitter theme, what is our tweet of the week?
Yeah, so this is a little bit bizarre. I was looking through a bunch of different tweets that were making news this past week, and I found one from a young gentleman who was traveling to the U.S. With his friend. And before he came to the U.S., he had sent out a tweet to another friend of hers saying, free this week for a quick gossip prep before I go and destroy America. So he wrote this on Twitter to his friend Melissa. And when he arrived in the U.S. With his travel partner, he was greeted by security by a border patrol, like I don't know what you call them. Is it TSA? And I guess somehow they had tracked down this tweet, saw it as a threat to U.S. security, and denied them entry to the U.S. So
yeah, it sounds
I think
like
that makes a pretty good tweet of the week.
Yeah. Whoops. I guess they held him for about 12 hours. And even after 12 hours of, it was probably not 12 hours of hard interrogation, but still a lot of questions and probably a lot of waiting around. They still didn't get to come into the U.S. They shipped him back. This story it's a little silly because, and we talked about this on TNT last week, actually. And someone pointed out, you know, the idea of destroying America could mean like, I'm going to party so hard, you know, paint the town red type of a thing. And it sounds like that's exactly what he meant. But it's a sort of thing like, you know, there are certain things you can't say out loud in an airport if you don't want to get arrested. And that's just the way it goes. And you kind of need to know better that people are out there watching. It does seem very strange that it was something that was picked up.
I know.
So, I mean, of all the tweets that are sent every day, we just talked about, 10,000 tweets each minute, you know, in the last few minutes of the Super Bowl last night. How does something like this get singled out?
I don't know. It's so bizarre, you know, but I guess it's a lesson to everybody out there to be careful what you send out on Twitter, whether it's a past or future employer or the government. It's a very, very, it's the most public of all of the social networks. And therefore, I guess no joking around when it comes to things like this.
Yeah,
serious issues.
Absolutely. Think before you tweet.
Yes.
When you do tweet, you should tweet at us. Really fun. Amber and I both have our own Twitter accounts, which seems to work pretty well. We don't actually have a show Twitter account. And Amber, we've talked a little bit about starting something up, and people ask us now and then, why don't you have sort of a central place for the social hour? And I'm just not sure that, I don't know. I feel like we both got our own avenues that seem to work out okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we need a show account. I know some shows do that, and they do it really well. What do you think?
I don't know. I just feel like it's I feel like it's just another service to manage that. It just doesn't really make sense. I mean, most people who tweet us about the show, whether it's feedback, they'll, you know, tweet one of us and then we'll include the other person. So it's pretty easy to find at Amber Mack or at Sarah Lane. So I think it makes sense just to continue to use them. But of course, on the website, you have on twit.tv, we have all of the links to anything we've talked about. But I think on Twitter, yeah, it's just as easy right now to go by our own, use our own handle. And you can also tweet us feedback that we can include during our viewer and listener feedback session during the show, too.
Absolutely. And if for whatever reason you're shy on Twitter, that's okay. You can email us. thesocialhour@twit.tv is our email address. We read our emails every week. We can't always feature all of them on our show, but rest assured, we definitely read them. You can also leave us a voicemail. 2626-SOCIAL is our Google Voice voicemail account. Just call us up, 2626-SOCIAL, and we will play your voicemail whenever possible. Or you can always record a video, upload it somewhere, your YouTube account, wherever you post videos. Send us the link, and we'll feature those as well. Okay, Amber, get ready for your rad or fad.
I will.
And while you're doing that, I want to take a minute to thank Hover. Hover is our second sponsor of this episode of The Social Hour. Hover is delightful. Do you know what Hover is? If not, let me tell you about two domain services that they have: premium domains and clunker trade-ins. Premium domains are for people who are willing to pay a little bit more for a URL that's shorter, that's catchier, commonly used words. Hover offers premium domains for people like that, where you've got a great business idea and you really need a good domain. And anybody who has gotten good domains, Kevin Rose would tell you milk.com, mm-hmm. that sort of thing. It's like those things aren't, you know, just available anymore. So Hover has a good way to help you search for something that's kind of premium. The Social Mob, for example, over on Hover, it's got a little star next to it, and it lets you know that this is the sort of domain that it offers, obviously for a higher fee, but it's something that if you're really serious about this stuff, you want to know is available, because these sorts of things, sometimes they expire, they become available, and you got to snatch them up before somebody else does. You can try a search on Hover and see what premium domains are available as well. And of course, if you have something in mind, you can look it up directly. If you have clunker domains registered with Hover, you can trade them in. So these are domains you've registered, renewed Hover. You want to upgrade your domain. Hover will take those old domains back, which is great. It will credit you everything that you spent on your clunker with Hover, the original registration fee, any renewal fees. So it's like upgrading. You know, you want to trade in your clunker car for a shiny new Mercedes, that sort of thing. That's right on Hover's website as well. So if you need a standard non-premium domain, we've got a offer code for you. Offer code is Social Hour to get 10% off of your domain. And if you want to trade in a clunker, you can call a customer service number on their website or email them at help@hover.com, and they'll walk you through the process. Again, that is hover.com and hover.com/social hour. All right, so there's hover.com/social hour to use. And then if you want to trade in your clunker domain, or 10% off your new domain, rather, they've got all sorts of specials. The offer code is Social Hour as well. So thanks to Hover for sponsoring this episode of The Social Hour. Amber, are you ready?
I am ready, Sarah. Okay, so this rad or fad, there's a little bit of a twist here, Sarah, because, okay, first of all, I'll tell you about it. The service is called Gripevine, and I've heard mumblings about this launching. It just launched today, and Gripevine is a social media network for consumer complaint resolution. So the idea being, you know, we all have complaints. We see them all the time on Twitter. People go and complain about everything from their the company that they have phone service from to their cable service and list of things. You know, airlines, it goes on and on and on. So this service, Gripevine, allows those people to get into an environment where they can connect with companies and they can resolve these problems. There are other services out there that do something like this, but why I found this most interesting is that, as you know, I've been speaking for a few years, and one case study I always talk about is called United Breaks Guitars. And that's that video from Dave Carroll where he talked about his experience on United Airlines. They broke his guitar, they ignored him for months, and all of a sudden this thing exploded, and it did a ton of damage to the United brand. Well, Dave Carroll is one of the co-founders of this service. So he's gone from musician to YouTube star to technology co-founder. And the reason I say there's a bit of a twist, I was tweeting with him, and he wants to come on the Social Hour.
Yay!
And talk about this service. And I'm so excited because I met him years ago, and it's just really fun to kind of watch his career, and a great case study in terms of what he did with this short little video to get attention from United. So Gripevine, I think it's a cool idea, and I want to call it, you know, rad, but I also feel like it'd be cool to have him on the show and talk a little further about it.
Absolutely. This is great. Looks rad to me. I have, I hate to say I have regular gripes with companies, but there are companies that I do have regular gripes with. I had an issue with Verizon recently that was resolved. I spent a lot of time dealing with customer service representatives before I felt satisfied enough to feel like the chapter had been closed, but it was pretty upsetting. Something like mm-hmm. Gripevine would seem right at my alley, because at this point it's like, well, I can start talking about it on Twitter and get some attention, but I'm not necessarily getting the attention from the people who matter the most.
Sure.
You know, you on Twitter can say, oh, Sarah, your story sounds terrible. That sucks. But it's not really helping me resolve anything. In theory, I think this is a great idea.
Yeah, I mean, and I also think it's nice to have a dedicated place for this. You know, people can go on and, get their complaints answered in a more organized fashion than maybe Twitter. I mean, I think Twitter is great too, but I've had times where I've had to complain about services from different companies. And the reality is, in 140 characters or less, sometimes it just doesn't work that well. You need a little bit more room to have some context around that particular complaint. So very cool. Cool that Dave Carroll's on board, and hope that we'll have him on the show in the next couple of weeks. And we can talk to him more about Gripevine and the whole history of United Breaks Guitars as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So looks rad so far. That's Gripevine. You can check it out and let us know what you think about Gripevine, so that when we do talk to Dave, we can include some questions and responses from you guys.
Yes.
Tweet us or email us or leave us a voicemail.
Just don't complain about the Social Hour there. That's not what it's for.
Right? No. Nobody would complain about the Social
Hour. You can email us to complain about that.
Yeah. Email us privately. Don't tell anybody else. Somebody in chat said, Sarah was saying too much. So you could complain about that on Gripevine, I guess. I mean, if that's our biggest problem, I think we're doing okay.
Yes, that is true. You always have to take that criticism with a grain of salt, right?
Exactly. Yes.
It's like the email I got when I first started out in TV, which was like, you're never going to make it, da-da-da-da-da. You know, it's like, you got to take those and kind of toss them aside.
It's true, yes. Or if you want to take them to heart, you won't get very far in the media business, because they will keep coming. And then they'll die off, you know? It's like, it's interesting the way that that works. It's sort of like, if you can outlast, if you can out-cockroach a hater, they either go away or they go, you know what? You're not so bad. I sort of admire the fact that you stuck it out. I've noticed
like
that for the most part.
It's like an initiation period, you know? Uh-huh. You have to go through it, right?
Right, exactly.
We have stories, I bet.
All right, Amber. Well, we have come to the end of our Social Hour this week. This was really fun.
It was lots of fun, Sarah. Lots of news and lots of cool new services, and also great tips for people out there who are job hunting. I think, although we didn't plan this theme for the show, it felt like there was a bit of a theme there.
Yeah, I agree. It's always good to, if you're actively looking, certainly to know what tools are out there for you, to just look as polished and professional and interesting as possible. Review is a great tool for that. And, you know, even in the in-between times where you've got a steady work and you're not really concerned about resumes or how to get your stuff out there, knowing what tools are available make it so much less stressful when you need to use them.
Yeah. Totally agree.
All right. Well, reminder that we are live Mondays, 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific. Join us live if you can. Otherwise, keep up with us. twit.tv/TSH is where you'll find all of our past episodes and our show notes. You can, of course, find us on iTunes as well. Until next week, I'm Sarah Lane.
And I'm Amber MacArthur. Thanks for watching.
Bye, everybody.